senior at Criswell College with a bachelor's degree in Bible studies. He's been accepted into Dallas Theological Seminary, where he intends to pursue a master's degree in theology. Kyle Wisdom.
Good evening. Please turn to 1 Samuel chapter 14. We're going to be going into a passage that has captured my heart and my mind for many, many years since I was very young. But before we get there, we're going to be in a lesson of contrast between a leader that God considers useful and uses, and then a leader that God considers useless and leaves behind. And so we're going to get there in just a second, but first I have to tell you about my brother. My brother and I, we were on a vacation in Seattle for a senior trip for him, and we were in the mountains and we were looking for adventure. And while we were out there, we were told that there was this abandoned train tunnel, that if you could find it somewhere off the side of the trail, you'd be able to crawl inside of it and be able to see all these wonderful, awesome things. And so we were keeping our eye out for it. We're expecting something train-sized with, like, tracks coming out of it and huge. And at one point, my brother looks up into the hills, and he sees something behind a bush. And so we go up there, and he finds a hole that's no wider than my arm span and only about 3 feet tall. And it looks much more like a spider's den than any sort of train tunnel that I've ever seen. And so I'm looking at this, and I've officially opted out on whatever adventure is about to occur here. But my brother is stooping down and looking at it. And I know what's going through his head, and I know, Trent, I am not going to tell our mother why you died this way. I'm not going to do it. But he looks at the hole, at that darkness, at that uncertainty. He looks back at me, and I know what he's about to do. And I see him stick his foot into the darkness and slide down into blackness and disappear. And I immediately realized that we were in huge trouble. And this is where we encounter the people of God in 1 Samuel chapter 14. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, we find the people of God in great trouble. And the question we have to answer is, what do we do when we find the people of God in distress? What do we as the leaders that are called to be the people who lead the people of God going to do when we find them in this situation? And so what we're going to see is that leadership requires something very specific. I've heard it defined this way. Leadership is giving others permission to go second. And we're going to see Jonathan do that for us. If you know the story of 1 Samuel chapter 13, you know that a lot of things have gone wrong very, very quickly. You know that Saul has gone out and attacked the enemies of God and the Philistines. And that went well at first, but then the Philistines responded and gained a huge army and attacked the people of God and surrounded the camp of Saul. And Saul had to wait because Samuel needed to offer a sacrifice and to go before the Lord and plead that they would give them the victory. But Saul got worried, and Samuel didn't come, and his army began to desert him, and so he offered the sacrifice himself, something the king was never allowed to do, something that was reserved for the prophets and for the priests. And so when Samuel arrives, he finds Saul and says, Saul, God has rejected you as his leader because you refuse to obey him. And so things go from bad to worse as the Philistines move into the land of Israel, and they begin taxing the people to take care of their metal implements, and they find themselves to where no one has any weapons to fight back except for Jonathan and Saul. And that's what we find ourselves in verse 1 of chapter 14 with Saul and his army camped on one side of a valley and the Philistines on the other. And there is nothing but silence. And this is what happens in that silence. Jonathan decides to go first. Verse 1, on one day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side. But he did not tell his father. Jonathan decides to go out in secret, and he decides to go out. Saul has set up his courtroom outside of the city of Gibeah. It says he's under a pomegranate tree or maybe in a cave, but he set up his royal court. He's put his throne down. He's got his army around him, even as a priest standing by waiting for his commands. He has all the trappings of leadership, but none of the character. He is setting himself up to look like a king and doing nothing that a king does. And he sits and does nothing as the enemies of God lay waste to his people. And he sits with an army surrounding him. And so Jonathan is sick of it. And so Jonathan says, fine, I'll go first. And so he takes his armor bearer with him and they go down into the valley. It says that there were rock faces on every side. So he's officially put himself in not a great position if you're going to conduct some sort of military operation. The cliffs are named, and the names are one that is slippery and one that is covered in thorns. So there's not really a lot of good options here for Jonathan or his armor bearer. And so when they get down into the valley, here's what happens. Jonathan turns to his armor bearer and says this, verse 6. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." You see, Jonathan was willing to lead because he was directed by his conviction. And the conviction that he had was that the Lord was willing to save no matter the odds, that no matter how small or how weak or how useless he felt in those moments, he could go and do something great because the Lord was great. Saul was preoccupied with the size of his army, but Jonathan was preoccupied with the power of his God. And so that's why they acted differently when they were given positions of leadership. And so he turns to his armor bearer and says, "We're going to go over there and we're going to pick a fight." And this is the way that the armor bearer responds. I love this. Verse 7, the armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul." What faith. Already, in the first moments of Jonathan's campaign, he has inspired those that follow after him. Jonathan went first, and he's given permission for his armor bearer to go second. And the armor bearer responds in faith. And the way that we see the armor bearer respond, I think, is supposed to be an image for us of the way that Jonathan looks to his Lord. That in the same way that the armor bearer says, "Listen, I don't know what we're about to do, but I'm in. Let's do this. Let's go for it. I'll follow you. Wherever you go, I'm going." And that's the way that Jonathan looks to his Lord. He says, "I don't know where this is about to go, but if you're going, I'm going." And so he steps out and he decides to have a plan. So the first thing he does in going first is he is directed by his conviction that God can save no matter the odds. The second thing we see is that Jonathan is driven by his courage. Look at what he does. Verse 8, Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Maybe that the Lord will work for us." We look down in verse 8. Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men and we will show ourselves to them." This is a terrible plan already. The only thing Jonathan has going for him at this point is the element of surprise. And he is going to give that up right off the bat. At which point I'm sure the armor bearer is saying, "Okay, I'm rescinding my former comments. We're going to start from ground zero." But he moves on. The plan gets worse. He says, "We will cross over, we will show ourselves to them." Verse 9, "If they say to us, 'Wait until we come up to you,' then we will stand in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us." Jonathan is making it really easy on the Lord to give him a sign, because the most likely option is they're going to say, "Come up here. Climb the slippery cliff to me, and then we will fight." Because Jonathan is ready for a fight. But he's not willing to go into this without seeking the will of the Lord. See, the Lord does not want people that are foolhardy. He wants people who seek his will in the midst of trials and uncertainty. And so he's saying, "Listen, we're going to make it in such a way that God has to answer us, but we're going to force God to answer us." And so he puts himself in this position. He puts himself in the worst tactical position possible and says, "If God puts us there, we will know that God will deliver." And everyone's going, "Yes, because only God can deliver you from where you are putting yourself." But here's what's awesome about Jonathan. Jonathan is driven by courage that it is better to obey the Lord even when it is inconvenient. Even when we have to give up all the things that would naturally tend toward our strength, that is the moment when we must obey the Lord the most. And so, they show themselves. And the Philistines mock them. This is always what the enemies of God do to the people of God. They mock them. "Look, the Israelites are coming out of the holes they've hidden themselves in." And they say, "Come up to us and we will show you a thing," is the way it's translated, which I'm sure is removing some things that we wouldn't want to hear. And Jonathan turns to his armor bearer and he says this, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." That's a weird thing to say because right now it's just Jonathan. But he says he's given them into the hands of Israel. This is for his people. This is not for Jonathan. This is a victory for the people of God. He's not concerned with himself. He's concerned with the good of the people of God. And so they go up there, and to make a long story short, until verse 15, they wreck shop. They kill 20 men within their first attack, and the Lord delivers through them by starting a panic. The whole camp goes into an uproar. Everyone's stumbling out of their tents, and they're picking up their swords and stabbing one another. And so the whole camp is being routed by the presence of two men who are willing to be faithful and follow the Lord by the conviction that he can save no matter the odds and by the courage that comes when you obey the Lord even when it is inconvenient. And now we get the contrast. Verse 16. The watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude was dispersing here and there. So the scout tells Saul, your enemies are freaking out, and we don't know what's going on. And so Saul says, look around, who's left? And they figure out that it's Jonathan and his armor bearer who have left. So first of all, this is a warning to all of us that would wish to be leaders in the church, myself included. If we are willing to take up the position but unwilling to pay the price that requires, we will see God work without us. We will see him move, and we will be standing there wondering what in the world is going on. And so Saul's behind the eight ball, and so he decides to rally himself and get himself invested in what's going on, because Saul's not going to let there be a victory without stamping his name on it. And so he looks to the priest, verse 18. So Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here, for the ark of God went at that time with the people of Israel. Because what needs to happen now is the priest needs to go before the army and make some set of proclamations. We see it in Deuteronomy chapter 20. There's certain protocols that God requires of the army before they go out. Something that Jonathan sort of allows to enter into his own little small campaign earlier on. Because he was able to do it even though it was inconvenient. But now we see Saul attempting to do the same thing, but look what happens. Verse 19, now when Saul was talking to the priest, the tumult in the camp of the Philistines increased more and more. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. This is the same thing we see in chapter 13. Saul's complete disregard for the things of God when it became inconvenient. In the moment when the camp was in tumult and he risked his own glory, he set aside the things of God so that he could have the tactical advantage. And we see later on in the chapter that we won't be able to get to that this ends up resulting in less victory for the people of God because he was more convinced that this was supposed to be Saul's victory instead of Israel's victory and God's victory. And so he rallies his troops together, verse 20, and Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and went into the battle. And behold, every Philistine's sword was against his fellow, and there was great confusion. I love that. It's almost like the author is saying, and by the way, he probably didn't do much because all the Philistines were killing themselves. God was taking care of the Philistines. Saul was not taking care of the Philistines. And look what happens. Because Jonathan was willing to go first, we see a multitude of people going second. First it's Saul, then look in verse 21. Now the Hebrews who had been with the Philistines before that time and who had gone up with them into the camp, even they also turned to be with the Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. So these mercenaries that had seen that it might be better to join the Philistines on this campaign see the work of Jonathan and the Lord and switch sides. And so now they start attacking the Philistines too because they are inspired by Jonathan's conviction. These men who only looked at what was in their best interest now see the conviction of Jonathan and follow his lead. And look what else happens. Verse 22, likewise, when all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines were fleeing, they too followed hard after them in the battle. So also we had the traitors who are now inspired by Jonathan's conviction. Now we have the cowards inspired by Jonathan's courage. And they say, maybe the Lord can save even with a few. And so they start streaming out of the mountains and begin attacking the Philistines wherever they can find them. And so Jonathan's courage and conviction to go first and to lead as a man of God has inspired a multitude to do the same and go second. And this is how it concludes. Verse 23, for the Lord saved Israel that day. And the battle passed beyond Beth-Aven. I love that this concludes with this formulaic description of the Lord saving his people. But I love that it follows after the prophecy that was given by Jonathan earlier on. Remember, he said, today he has given them into the hands of Israel. Because Jonathan knew something about the people of God. When they have a proper leader who is following God in obedience, all of them will follow in line. All of them will be inspired. And so when he stepped out in faith, he knew that all of the people of God would be willing and able to step out in faith. And so as I watched my brother disappear into the darkness of that forsaken cave, I had a single thought. Well, I had two thoughts. One, I didn't want to go in that cave. There was nothing inside of me that wanted to go down into that darkness because all I had was uncertainty. I lacked his conviction that there was a light at the end of that tunnel. I lacked that conviction, and I lacked the courage to do anything like he was doing. But in that moment, I had a single thought. to go with you. My brother's in there. I'm going with him. And so in that moment, some of us, based on our position or based on our personality, we're not always going to be Jonathan. Some of you are not at the tops of your churches. Some of you may be in situations where you have to take a second seat to other people. But here's the thing. Either you're Jonathan or you're his armor bearer. And either way, the response is the same and the heart is the same and the passion is the same. We are driven and deliberate because of our conviction that God can save no matter the odds. And we are pressed on by our courage that no matter what, it is better to follow God, even when it is inconvenient. And the cry of our hearts should be this: do all that you have in mind. I am with you, heart and soul.